The Magnetic Lady, or Humours Reconciled. Written by Ben Johnson and adapted by Peter Barnes. London, 1632.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
Good day to you.
What do you lack? What is do you lack? Any fine fancies, humours, characters, ideas? Definition of lords and ladies, waiting women, knights, captains, courtiers, lawyers.
Ah, a pretty prompt boy for the drama shop.
And bold. Where's one of your masters, sirrah, the poet?
Which one of them, sir? We have divers that drive that trade now. Poets, poetaccios, poetasters, poetitos.
We would speak with the poet of the day, boy, Master Ben Johnson.
Ah, sir, he's not here.
Oh?
Bedridden, I fear.
Ah.
But I have the running of this drama shop for the time under him, and can show you all the variety of plays the stage can afford at present.
We are a pair of public persons, this gentleman and myself, that have been sent to you upon state business.
It concerns but the state of the stage, I hope.
We are sent unto you from the people.
The people? What kind of people?
Not your sinful sixpenny mechanics.
But the better and braver sort of people, plush and velvet outside.
Which are mostly pawned. Well, I take these as part of the people, too. What brings you to me?
You have heard, boy, the ancient poets had still to please the people.
Aye. Their chief aim was...
Populo ut placerent. He understands that.
Quas fecissent fabulas.
Bless me.
I understand that since I learnt Terence in the third form at Westminster School. Go on, sir.
No, the people have employed us in their name to entreat an excellent play from you.
For they've had very mean ones from Master Johnson's shop of late.
Troth, gentlemen, I have no plays which I dare thrust upon the people with praise. But this one, such as it is, I will venture with your people. You tell them about it so that they shall know a good play when they hear it.
We'll pass our verdict.
You'll tend to your names, gentlemen.
Here's Master Proby, a man of most powerful speech.
And Master Damplay here will make good all he undertakes.
Good Master Proby and Master Damplay.
And what is the title of your play here?
Huh? An attractive title. The Magnetic Lady.
The Magnetic Lady. But why the subtitle, Humours Reconciled?
The author began his career on the stage with every man in his humour.
Yes, indeed.
And after, every man out of his humour. And since continued in all his plays, especially those of the comic thread, whereof the New Inn was the last to deal with the humours or the manners of men.
Mercifully.
Now, finding himself near the close of his working life, he is seized on the idea of this magnetic mistress, Lady Lodestone. A brave, bountiful housekeeper and a virtuous widow. She has a young niece, Mistress Placentia, ripe for a man and marriageable. The author makes that his centre attraction to draw thither a diversity of persons of different characters and manners. These he aims to reconcile, which is why he hath the subtitle, Humours Reconciled.
A bold undertaking, and far greater than the reconciliation of Protestant and Catholic churches. The quarrel between humours having been, in my poor opinion, the root of all schism and faction in both church and commonwealth.
Such is the opinion of many wise men. How he will achieve this, we cannot tell, for he will not give the play a prologue. He's lost too much that way already, he says.
I'm sure he has.
But he is confident it shall super-please judicious spectators. He leaves it to work on them by example or otherwise.
He may be deceived in that, boy, if you follow examples now, especially if they be good.
Here, in this drama shop, we actually stage the plays, gentlemen, to save you the trouble of reading them.
I've always found the reading of plays most taxing.
Sure, you'll find nothing taxing here, gentlemen. All is made relatively easy. We have a mad musician and actors.
What sort of actors, sir?
The motley sort. And we pay them whether they play the plays or no.
Most generous.
I believe the Magnetic Lady is ready to begin, gentlemen. Please, come this way. Take your seats and plant yourselves here as near the stage as you can. Wine, gentlemen.
Most thoughtful.
But please, do not interrupt, else you break or pucker the thread of the argument with unnecessary questions. For I must tell you, this is not me but the author, a good play is like a skein of silk, which if you take by the right end, you may wind off at pleasure. But if you light on the wrong end, you'll pull all into a knot which nothing but the shears will undo or separate. Actors, you may begin. A street in front of Lady Lodestone's house. London, 1632. Master Compass, a scholar mathematic, enters in company with his brother, Captain Ironside, a soldier.
Welcome, brother!
Brother!
Welcome, good Captain Ironside and brother. You shall along with me. I am lodged hard by, but here is a noble lady's house in the street, the Lady Lodestones, one that will bid us welcome, whether a gentlewomen and male guests of several humours, carriage and constitution, profession too, but so diametrically opposed one to another, that if I can but hold them together and draw them to a sufferance of themselves till after dinner, I shall believe my wit is magisterial.
Truth, brother Compass, you shall pardon me. I love not so to multiply my acquaintances at the cost of a meal.
Captain, you know I am a scholar and part-time soldier. I have been employed by some of the greatest statesmen of the kingdom these many years, and in my time conversed with sundry humours, adapting myself to all company, honest men and knaves, good fellows, hypocrites, all sorts of people. However, so divided in themselves, I have brought them together.
Sir, I confess you to be one well-read in men and manners, but to deal plainly with you as a brother, my temperament is as stubborn as the rest, and as unmanageable.
Brother, could I but persuade you, I have a little plot against the rest of the company. If you could endure to hear yourself or your profession glanced at in a few slighting terms, it would help me and do yourself no disrepute at all in the end.
I never feel myself perturbed with any general words against my profession, unless some smart strip they do awake and stir me. To wise and well-experienced men, words do not signify. They have no owner, save with dull grammarians.
Here comes Parson Pallet here, a venerable youth, I must salute him, and a great clerk. He's going to the ladies, and though you see him thus without his cope, I do assure you he's our parish pope. God save my reverend clergy.
The witty Master Compass, how is't with you?
My Lady Lodestone stays for you and for your counsel, touching her niece, Mistress Placentia Steele, who strikes the fire of full 14 today, ripe for a husband.
Fourteen, you say? Aye, she chimes. So you, Dr. Rutt, the house physician, he said for
to. To counsel, time you were there. Make haste and give it a quick dispatch that we may all go to dinner, parson, and drink a health or two more to the business.
Oh, this is a strange put-off. A reverend youth. You use him most reverently, methinks. What do you call him? Pallet Parson, or Parson Pallet.
Whichever is shorter. I can give you his character. He is the prelate of the parish here, and governs all the Thames, appoints the cheer, writes down the bill of fare, selects all the guests, makes all the matches and the marriage fests within the ward, draws all the parish wills, designs the legacies, and strokes the gills of the chief mourners. He is, as he conceives himself, a fine, well-furnished, and apparelled divine.
Who made that epigram, you?
No, great writer, Ben Johnson. Made it.
Well, what's the other character, Dr. Rutt?
Well, the same man made one for him, too.
Ben Johnson.
Yes, but this is shorter, and not in rhyme, but blanks. Rutt is a stout physician to the family, licentious in discourse, and in his life a professed voluptuary, the slave of money, a buffoon in manners, obscene in language, which he passes for wit, is saucy in his logics, and disputing is anything but civil. Now see, here they are, Dr. Rutt and Parson Prelate walking with my Lady Lodestone in consultation afore the door. We will slip in the back way before they see us.
"'Tis my brother, Sir Moth Interest's fault. My niece is not well.
Old Sir Moth.
He keeps off all her suitors.
What?
Keeps her diary still in his hands, and will not part with all on any terms.
Hinkinai lacrimai, events flows the cause of the main grievance.
How much is the dowry?
No petty sum, Dr. Rutt.
16,000 pounds.
He should be forced, madam, to lay it down. When is it payable?
When she is married.
Marry her, madam.
Get her married, lose not a day now.
Not a minute. Pursue your project. Master Compass advised you to. He is the perfect instrument your ladyship shall sail by.
Master Compass is a fine, witty man. I saw him go in.
Yes, and a soldier with him.
Some new suitor, madam.
I am beholding to him. He brings ever variety of good persons to my table, and I must thank him. Though my brother, Sir Moth, dislikes it a little.
He likes nothing that runs your way.
Truth, Master Compass cares not. He'll go his own way if he thinks it right.
He's a true friend.
Ah.
And there is Master Practice, the fine young man of law who comes to the house. My brother brooks him not, because he thinks he is assigned by me for my niece. He will not hear of it.
Yet your ladyship doth wisely. We'll make him lay down the dowry sooner. Mm. If he but dream, you'll match her with a lawyer.
So Master Compass says, it is between the lawyer and the courtier who shall have her.
Courtier? Ah, yes, Sir Diaphanous Silkworm.
A fine gentleman, old Master Silkworm, sir.
And a neat courtier of a most elegant thread.
And so my friend Mistress Polish assures me. Ah, here she comes. Welcome, Intro. How dost thou, gentle Polly?
Your ladyship is still the Lady Lonestone, who draws and draws unto you guests of all sorts. The courtiers and the soldiers and the scholars, the travellers, physicians and divines. Yeah. As Dr. Ridley wrote and Dr. Barlow, they both have writ of you and Master Compass.
We mean they shall write more ere it be long.
Alas, they are both dead, and please you.
Yes.
But your ladyship means well. How does your fine niece, my charge, Mistress Placentia Steele?
She is not well.
Her doctor says so.
Not very well. She cannot shoot at butts or manage a great horse. She has a dainty spice of the green sickness.
Oh, Steele!
Or the dropsy, a trifle of nothing, but my lady here, her noble
she
aunt.
She is a noble aunt.
Yes.
And a right worshipful lady.
Yes,
and virtuous. I know it well.
Well, if you know it, peace.
Aye, good sister Polish, hear you better speak.
Sir, I will speak with my good lady's leave. And speak again. I did bring up my lady's niece, Mistress Placentia Steele, with Nurse Keep, who tended her. She was left a legacy by her father and mother.
We knew
her
that.
Her mother died in childbed of her, and her father lived not long after, for he loved her mother. They were a godly couple, yet both died, as we must all. No creature is immortal, I have heard our pastor say. No, not even the faithful. And they did die, as I said, both in one month.
Sure, you are not long lived if you spend breath thus.
And did bequeath her to my care and hand to polish and bring up. I molded her and fashioned her and formed her. She hath the sweat both of my brows and brains, my lady knows it, since she could write when she was four.
I know not that she could right so early, my good Polish. But I do know she was so long in your care till she was 12 years old that I called for her and took her home, for which I thank you, Polish, and am beholden to you.
I sure thought, Parson, Mistress Polish had a lease of talking for 9 lives.
Maybe she had.
Mm. Sir, £16,000 was then her portion, for she was indeed their only child.
Yes.
And this was to be paid upon her marriage, if she married, with my lady's blessing here, her aunt. I heard the will read.
We know that, too.
Master Steele, her father, the world condemned him to be very rich and very hard, and he did stand condemned with that vain world till, as 'twas proved after, he left almost as much more to sundry charities. Sir Moth Interest, my lady's brother, whose sister he had married, holds all in his close grip. But Master Steele was liberal and a fine man, and she a dainty dame, and a religious, and a bountiful. Master Compass! You knew her, Master Compass!
Spare the torture. I do confess
and
that
and her husband, what a fine couple they were and how they lived.
Yes.
And loved together like a pair of turtles.
Yes.
And feasted all the neighbours.
Oh, take it off. Somebody have mercy.
Oh, he knows her, it seems.
She would dispute with the doctors of divinity at her own table and the spittle preachers and find out the Armenians.
The Armenians.
I say the Armenians.
Nay, I say so too, the Armenians.
Master Polish called them the Armenians.
And Medes and Persians, did he not?
Yes, he knew them and so did Mistress Steele. She was his pupil, the Armenians. He would say, were worse than Papists. And then the Persians were our Puritans.
And the Medes?
The middlemen, the lukewarm Protestants.
Confute her, Parson.
I respect no parsons, chaplains, or doctors. I will speak.
Yes, if it be reason, let her.
Yes, she cannot speak reason.
What mad woman have they got here to bait?
Sir, I am mad in truth and to the purpose. And cannot but be mad to hear my lady's dead sister slighted, witty Mistress Steele.
If she had wit, death has gone near to spoil it, assure yourself.
She was both witty and zealous and lighted all the tinder of the truth, as one said, of religion in our parish. Oh, she was too learned to live long with us. She knew the Bible and the Holy Tongue and all the Pharisees.
Dear Polish, be you gone at this time to see your charge, my niece.
Oh, I shall obey if your wise ladyship think fit. I know to yield insult to my superiors.
A good woman, but when she grows earnest, a little troublesome and out of season, her love and zeal transport her.
Oh, I am glad that anything could port her hence. We now have hope of dinner. I have brought your ladyship a hungry guest here, a soldier, and my brother, Captain Ironside, the solemn and adopted son of slaughter. He's more delighted in the chase of an enemy than all the hope of numerous succession.
He is no suitor then.
So it should seem.
And if he can get pardon at heaven's hand for all his murders, he is in as good case as a new christened infant. His employments continue without interruption and do not allow him or time or place to commit any other sin but those of murder. Please you make him welcome for a meal, madam.
The nobleness of his profession makes his welcome perfect, though your coarse description would seem to sully it.
Never when a beam of so much favour from your eyes doth illuminate it, right knowing lady. Sir Diaphanus and Master Practice approach.
See, here they come, the prime magnetic guests of our Lady Lodestone. Sir Diaphanus Silkworm, a courtier extraordinary, who by diet of meats and drinks, a temperate exercise, choice music, frequent baths, hourly changes of shirts and waistcoats, means to immortalize mortality itself, and makes the essence of his whole happiness the fashion of the court.
I thank you, Master Compass, for your short eulogy.
It is much in little, sir.
Concise and quick, the true style of an orator.
But Master Practice here, my lady's lawyer, or man of law, for that is the true way to write it, and the preferments that go along with it, a scarce the thundering brute of invasion, another armada threatening his country with ruin, would no more disturb him than Syracuse sack did Archimedes. So much he loves that lawyer's cap, the bench gown. These show a man wedded to the study of our laws.
Which you but think the crafty impositions of subtle clerks, feats of fine understanding to abuse clots and clowns with, Master Compass, having no ground in nature to sustain it.
Tut, all men are philosophers in their own way. There's some off. Here he comes now. As able a philosopher in buying and selling, has reduced his method to certain principles, and in that method, as he will tell you instantly by logarithms, the utmost profit of any stock on the market.
What is that with him, Master Compass?
A kind of laborious secretary.
It is Master Bias.
Sire?
You know the man.
Well, I've seen him with cloth there with his bundles of papers and petitions.
Here's one that overrules, though, by his authority of living there, and cares for no man else. Neglect the sacred letter of the law, and holds it all to be but a dead heap of civil institutions, a farrago, a thing of nothing.
And that's your quarrel with him?
I tell you, Sister Lodestone.
Hang your ears this way. Now Moth opens his mouth.
I have brought you here the very man, the jewel of all the court. Close, Master, be our sister. Apply him to your side, or you may wear him here on your breast, or hang him in your ear. He's a fit pendant chrysolite, a gem cut from the quarry of Machiavelli.
Yes, indeed. You praise him, brother, as you had hoped to sell him.
No, madam, as he had hoped to sell your niece to him.
Beware your true jests, Master Compass. They will not be relished.
I will tell you, sister, I cannot cry his value up enough. He is invaluable. All the lords do him. He will screw you out a secret.
So easy as some vet worms a dog.
You may be merry, Master Compass, but though you have the right to succeed to an office, you are not in it, sir.
Remember that.
Why should that fright me, Master Bayer, from telling me whose ass you are?
Sir, he is one who can deliver two letters as punctually and in a good fashion as ever a secretary can in court.
Why, is it any matter in what fashion a man delivers letters, so long as he does not open them, Master Bias?
Yes, we have certain precedents in court.
Which some call civility, Master Bias.
Sir, you may call what you please. But we that tread the path of public business know what a tacit shrug is, or a shriek, and 20 other secondary matters on the by you leemen understand not. I shall block you, sir, if your office comes in my lord's way.
What office is Master Compass in line to succeed in?
Surveyor of General Projects, if the chief surveyor, Master Thinwit, agrees.
What is it worth?
Oh, sir, an untold sum.
We'll think on to for dinner.
Dinner.
That's the end of our protasis, or first act. More wine, gentlemen.
Ah.
Hey. Well, what think you of it?
Well, boy, it is a fair presentment of your actors and a handsome promise of things to come hereafter.
But there's nothing done in it or concluded. Therefore, I say no act.
No act? Ah. A fine piece of logic. Do you look, Master Dan, playing for conclusions in the first act?
No.
I thought the law of comedy had reserved them for the climax, and that the epitasis, as we're taught, and the catastasis are for the intervening parts. But you would have all come together, it seems. So if a child could be born in a play and grow up to a man in the first scene before he went off stage, and then after to come forth a squire and be made a knight, and that knight to travel between the acts and do wonders in the Holy Land, and at last come home laden with miracles, only then will you be pleased.
These miracles would please the people, I assure you, for they expect miracles, and more than miracles, from Master Johnson's pen.
Would we had hocus pocus for them, then. Or that they would be gone hence now after the first act, or expect no more hereafter than they understand.
Why so, my peremptory Jack?
My name is John. Because who expect miracles, what is impossible or beyond nature, defraud themselves.
Hey there, the boy said, well, they do defraud themselves indeed.
And therefore, Master Damplay, unless, like a solemn justice, you will damn our play unheard or unexamined, I shall entreat your mistress, Madam Expectation, to have patience but a pissing while. Give our springs leave to open a little by degrees. A source of ridiculous matter may break forth anon that shall steep their temples and bathe their brains in laughter, awakening any velvet lethargy in the house.
Why do you maintain Master Johnson's quarrel so with velvet and good clothes, boy? We've seen him in good clothes, Anna.
And may do him better. But his clothes shall never be the best thing about him. He will have other things beside, either of letters or honesty, shall proclaim him a man, though he went naked.
He is beholden to you if you can make that good, boy.
Himself hath done that already.
What is your name, John, and your country?
John Trigust, my name. A Cornish youth and Master Ben's servant.
A West Country breed, as I thought. You were so bold.
Rather saucy. Faith, we do call a spade in Cornwall. If you dare damn our play in the wrong place, we shall tell you so.
Good boy.
The second act begins. A room in Lady Lodestone's house. Mistress Placentia, Lady Lodestone's niece, enters with her nurse, Nurse Keep, and her waiting woman, Mistress Pleasance, Mistress Polish's daughter.
Sweet Mistress Placentia, pray be merry. You're sure to have a husband now.
Aye, if the store hurt not the choice, Nurse Keep.
Store is no sore, young mistress, my mother is wont to say.
What does your mother mean, Mistress Pleasant?
Store meaning abundance, ergo, abundance is not sore. It does you no harm to have abundant suitors.
Your mother, she says wisely as any mouth in the parish, Mistress Pleasance. But fix on one. Fix upon one, good Mistress Placentia.
There's Master Practice, who is called to the bench.
Lawyer's wife.
And a fine lawyer's wife.
He's a brave call.
Oh, sweet Mistress Practice.
Gentle Mistress Practice.
Fair, open Mistress Practice.
Aye, and close and cunning Mistress Practice.
Oh, I do not like that. The courtiers is the neater calling.
Yes, my lady silkworm.
To shine in plush.
Like a young night crow, a diaphanous silkworm.
Lady diaphanous sounds most delicate. Mm.
Which would you choose now, mistress?
I cannot tell.
Oh. Here's my mother.
Oh, no, my dainty charge and diligent nurse. What were you chanting on? God bless you, daughter.
Mother?
We were wishing a husband for my young mistress here. A good man to please her, Mistress Polly.
She shall have a man, good nurse, and must have a man and a half, if we can choose him. The doctors and the scholars and my lady, who's wiser than all of us. Now, where's Master Needle? Her ladyship so lacks him to prick out the man. Attend to thy duties, daughter.
Yes, mother.
You look not well, methinks, Placentia. How do you, dear Trudge? You must have a husband, and you shall have a husband. There's two put out to making for you. A third your uncle promises, but you must still be ruled by your aunt, according to the will of your dead father and mother, who are in heaven. Your lady aunt has choice in the house for you. We do not trust your uncle. He would keep you a spinster still by keeping your dowry. The interest on it is beyond computing. So he would keep you alone without a husband, but in sickness. Oh. Aye, the green sickness. Oh. A kind of disease, I can assure you. And like the fish our mariners call remora.
A remora, mistress, a sucker fish.
Ah, goody nurse. She knows of that, because she's a sailor's wife and comes from Shadwell.
I do.
I say remora, that with its sucker will make a ship that's under sail stay still in the water. And stays are long and tedious things to maids, and maidens are young ships that would be sailing when they be rigged. Is that not so, Master Needle?
True. For them to be stayed...
The stay is dangerous. You have it, Master Needle.
Well, I know a little, and can assure you from the doctor's mouth, Mistress Placentia here has the dropsy.
What? Oh, I do!
She must have a change of air before she can recover.
Say you so, sir?
No, the doctor says so.
Oh. Here you, Nurse Keep. How come this to pass? This is your fault, in truth. It shall be your fault, and must be your fault. Why is your mistress sick? She had her health while she was with me.
Alas, good Mistress Polish, I'm no saint to be urged to give health or sickness at my will. I do but await the stars' good pleasure and do my duty.
You must do more than your duty, foolish nurse. You must do all you can, and more than you can, more than is possible when folks are sick, especially a mistress, a young mistress.
Here's Lady Lodestone and Dr. Rutt himself. He cannot do that.
Doctor, do all you can, I pray and beseech you, for my Placentia.
She loves my niece.
I know you can do all things, sir.
Peace, madam.
Especially in a new case of the dropsy. Placentia, I do fear, is leavened.
Leavened, what's that?
Puffed, blown up.
Puffed, blown up, speak English.
She swells and swells.
Give her vent if she does swell. A gimlet must be had. It is. Tympanite. She is troubled with.
What?
There are three kinds. Right? The first is an asaka. Under the flesh.
Oi.
A tumor. That's not hers.
Oh, no.
The second is ascite, or aquosis, a watery humour. That's not hers either. But tympanite, which we call the jump, a wind bombs in the belly, must be unbraced with a faucet or a peg let out.
Oh.
Then she'll do well. Get her a husband.
Oh, I say so too, Master Doctor.
As soon as we can, let her bear up today. Laugh and keep company with some card game like Gleek or crimp.
Your ladyship says right. Crimp, sure, will cure her.
Yes, and Gleek, too. She must tomorrow go down into the country some 20 miles, a coach and 6 brave horses, take the fresh air a month there or 5 weeks, and then return a bride up to the town for any husband in the hemisphere to chuckle at when she has dropped her tympany.
Must she drop it?
It is why it is called the dropsy. Oh. The tympanite is one kind of dropsy, yes. A trifle, thing of nothing, a mere vapour. I'll blow it away. Oh.
Needle, get you the coach ready for tomorrow morning.
Yes, madam.
Yeah, I'll go with you.
I'll go to the country with her myself.
But first, dear madam, think. Resolve upon a husband for her this day.
I have done.
Oh!
The man I have designed her to, indeed, is Master Practice.
Master Practice?
He's a neat man, forward and growing up in a profession. Likely to be somebody if Westminster stands and pleading holds. A prime young lawyer's wife is a right happy fortune.
And she's bringing so plentiful a dowry that they may live like king and queen at common law together. Sway judges, guide the courts, command the clerks, and strike the evidence, rule at their pleasure, like petty sovereigns in all cases.
Oh, that will be a work of time. She may be old before her husband rise to a chief judge and all her flower be gone. No, no. A lady, a grand lady, I'd have her. And in court, the Lady Silkworm, a diaphanous lady, and be a viscountess to carry all before her, as we say. Her gentleman usher and pages bareheaded to bid her aunt welcome at her lodging.
You say, well, if my Lady Lodestone could admit to have her niece take precedence over her.
For that I must consult mine own ambition.
Oh, you shall have precedence. You shall be a countess.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Diaphanus shall make you a countess, too.
Oh, yeah.
He has my ascent, sir. Oh, fine courtier. Yeah. Oh, blessed man.
Oh.
I tell thee, parson, if I get Mistress Placentia, reckon thou hast a friend in court, and shall command any church preferment thou hast a mind to.
I thank you, Sir Diaphanus. I'll work on my Lady Lodestone and my lady's friends, Mistress Polish, Dr. Rutt, and Squire Needle, and Master Compass, who is all in all her moving spirit. Yes. He's the one that went to sea with her husband, Sir John Lodestone, and brought home the rich prizes. All that wealth is left her, for which service she respects him. There is also a dainty scholar in the law, who she wholly employs, one Master Practice. Oh. But he hath confessed to me in private that he loves another, Mistress Pleasance. Therefore he is no rival to you.
I thank thee, my noble parson. There's £500.
Of course, the niece. I'll move the aunt. Oh, and there's Mistress Polish. She expects a morsel. Have you ne'er a ring or trifle to throw away?
Oh, yes, yes. Here's a diamond of some 60 pounds. I pray you give her that.
If she will take it.
And there's an emerald for the doctor, too. Thou, Parson Pallet, thou shalt coin me. I am thine. We'll in and join the others.
Oh, no, stay. Oh. There's Master Compass. Do you see my Lady Lodestone and all the rest? How they do flutter about him. He is the oracle of the house and family. Mistress Placentia is not present. Now is your time. Go find her. Win her.
I will, Parson.
Whilst I go in.
Parson Pallet, stand not off. You may approach. This is nothing we handle that you may not hear. We can all give counsel. The gentle Master Practice hath dealt clearly and nobly with you, madam.
Have you talked with him? And made the overture?
Yes, first I moved the business trusted to me by your ladyship, in your own words, almost your very syllables. Then I enlarged, in my own homely style, the special goodness and greatness of your bounty in your choice, to make him a nephew by the offer of your niece, with such a dowry, which, when he had heard, and most maturely acknowledged, as his calling tends to maturity, he answered with an ample courtesy. But as the thing stood with his fortune, he would not prevaricate with your ladyship, but must refuse the offer, since he could not with honesty accept it, being engaged already.
The same he said to me.
Did he name the woman?
Being a lawyer, he did, and he did not.
Come, leave your clever rhetoric.
Why, now your ladyship is free to choose the courtier, Sir Diaphanus. He shall do it. I'll move him to it myself.
What will you move him to?
Making you a countess. I'll to him.
Master Compass, know you which party Master Practice means?
No, but your parson here says he knows.
I fear he fables. Eh? Parson, do you know who Master Practice is engaged to?
I'll tell you, but under seal of secrecy. Her mother must not know. It is with your ladyship's woman, Mistress Polish's daughter, Mistress Pleasance.
He is mad.
Oh, hide the hideous secret from the mother. She'll trouble us all else.
Did he name Pleasance? Are you sure, Parson?
It is true.
Sir Diaphanus, do but make Placentia's aunt a countess, and she is yours. Her aunt has countless worlds to leave you. The wealth of 6 East Indian fleets, at least. Her husband, Sir John Lodestone, was the governor of the company 7 years.
And will you make me a viscountess too, sir? How do they make a countess? In a chair or on a bed?
Both ways, sweet Placentia. Both ways.
Ah, here comes Sir Moth, your brother, with his Master Bias and Master Practice deep in discourse. It will be a bargain and a sale, I see, by the close working of their heads.
Will Master Practice be counsel against us?
Oh, he is a lawyer and will speak for his fee against his father and mother, all his kindred, his brothers or sisters. There is no exception at law. Do not you offer to meddle. Let them take their course. Dispatch and marry her off to any husband. Be not scrupulous. Let who can have her. Just so Sir Moth lay down the dowry.
There are plots, and plots upon plots.
The truth is, Master Practice, now we are sure that you are not interested. We can tell you all.
No.
The dowry left was £16,000. I do confess it, as a man should.
Now, for the interest arising from the diary, it was the donor's wish. It should pay me for my stewardship and breaking of my sleep. No petty charge, you know that sum, to keep a man awake for 14 years, Master Practice.
But as you knew how to use it in that time, I am sure it has rewarded your waking.
Well, that's my industry, as it might be your reading, study, and counsel, and your pleading. Who denies it you? I have my calling, too. Well, sir, the contract is with Master Biaskia. £10,000. An ample dowry for a younger brother. He expects no more than that sum from me. 10,000, not 16. These are the conditions.
A direct bargain and sale in the open market.
And what I have given him withal, to appear suitably dressed. No. A matter of 400 to be deducted upon the payment.
Right. You deal like a just man still.
Draw up the contract, good Master Practice, for us, and be speedy.
But here's a mighty gain, sir, you have made of this one stock. The principal first doubled in the first 7 year, and that redoubled in the next seven. Besides, £6,000 you have just taken for yourself. There's 80,000 got in 14 year.
I think it be.
How will you escape the clamour and the envy?
Let them exclaim in envy, Master Bias. What care I? The murmurs raise no blisters in my flesh. My monies are my blood, my parents' kindred. And he that loves not these, he is unnatural.
Gentlemen.
Master Compass.
Sir Moth, did you say he who loves not money is unnatural?
Yes. He who loves it not infinitely is so, and I will prove it does. First, we all know the soul of man is infinite in what it covets. Uh-huh. Who desireth knowledge desires it infinitely. Mm. Who covets honour covets it infinitely. It will be then no hard thing for a coveting man to prove or to confess he aims at infinite wealth.
His soul lying that way.
Infinite wealth. Oh, go you on, Sir Moth.
Next, if we consider man a member of the body politic, we know by experience that the prince hath need more of one wealth than 10 fighting men, and therefore, if the prince's aims be infinite, we must love him who makes
infinite wealth.
An obvious conclusion, and a safe one.
Thirdly, wealth gives a man the leading voice at all conventions, and displaceth worth. Fourthly, it doth enable him that hath it to the performance of real actions. It gives him precise knowledge of himself, for if he be rich, he straight knows whether he have any compassion or inclination unto virtue or no, whether poor knave erroneously believes if he were rich, he would build churches or do such mad things. Fifthly, your wise poor men have ever been content to observe rich fools and so serve them, subjecting all their wisdom to the other's wealth and become gentlemen parasites, squire bawds, to feed their patrons' honourable humours. Sixthly, 'tis certain that a man may leave his wealth to his children or his friends. His wisdom he cannot so dispose by legacy, nor would they be a brass farthing better for it. Seventhly...
What have you done here, Master Compass? To invite your friend and brother to a feast where all the guests are mere strangers, and no man knows another or cares if they be Christians or Mohammedans that here are met.
Is it anything to you, Brother Ironside, to know the religions of those you fight for?
Yes, and with whom I eat. I may dispute, and how shall I hold an argument with such I neither know their humours nor their heresies? Here's no man among these that keeps a servant who I can ask who his master is. Yet in the house I hear it buzzed that are a brace of doctors, a fool and a physician, with a courtier that feeds on mulberry leaves like a true silkworm, a lawyer, and a mighty money board, Sir Moth.
That is me, sir.
Who has brought a master Bias with him.
Bias!
A man of a most animadverting humour, who to endear himself unto his lord will tell him you and I, or any of us that here are met, are all pernicious spirits, and men of pestilent purpose, meanly affected unto the state we live in. And to beget thanks from the great men of the time, he breeds jealousies in them against us. He crosses our fortunes, frustrates our endeavours, and this sweet trick be called cutting of throats with a whispering or a pen knife. I must cut Master Bias' throat now. I am bound in honour and by the Lord of Arms to see it done. I dare to do it, and I dare to profess the doing of it.
being such a rascal who is the common offence against mankind and worthy to be torn up from society.
You shall not do it, sir.
Never, sir.
Why? Will you entreat yourself a beating for him, my courteous brother? No. If you will, have it, you. No man deserves it better now, I think, on't than you, that will keep consort with such fiddlers, pragmatic flies, fools, publicans, and moths, and leave your honest and adopted brother.
Raise the house against him. He'll kill us all.
Would I were at court again?
How they scattered.
Run away like bugs into the crannies of a rotten bedstead. Pray heaven they be not frightened from their stomachs, that so my lady's table be emptied of food.
Master Ironside, Master Compass, 'tis dinner time.
Dinner! Dinner's on the board. I must to it.
Stay, Mistress Pleasance. I must ask you a question. Have you any lawsuits pending?
Lawsuits? Aye, Master Compass.
Answer me briefly. It is dinner time. They say you have retained brisk master practice here as your counsel and to be joined with him in marriage.
In what? Says so. Oh, you are disposed to jest.
No, I am in earnest. 'Tis given out in the house, so I assure you. I'll tell you more anon.
This riddle shows a little love trick on the face of it. I will study it.
End of Act Two, gentlemen.
Tell us, whose Lord Secretary is Master Byers based upon?
You might as well ask me what alderman is Sir Moth based on, or what eminent lawyer the ridiculous Master Practice.
It is an insidious question, Brother Dalton. Iniquity itself would not have urged it. It is picking the lock of the scene, not opening it in a fair way with a key. A play, though it apparel and present vices in general, flies from all particularities in person.
But if I decide to guess who the person is, who shall hinder me?
Yet in not telling anyone else, you do no man an injury. But if you do, using the author's words as an excuse, you make a libel of his comedy.
Oh, he told us that in a prologue long since. The second prologue to The Silent Woman.
If you do the same reprehensible things, still the same reprehensible things will be done to you. Ben's own words. I can invent no better nor he.
It is the vice of interpretation that deforms the figure of many a fair scene by drawing it awry. It is an unjust way of hearing and beholding plays, this. And most unbecoming a gentleman to appear malignantly witty in another's work.
Oh,
they are no other but narrow and shrunk natures, shriveled up, poor things that cannot think well of themselves, who dare to detract others.
Why, boy, this were a strange empire, or rather a tyranny over gentlemen you would entitle your writer to, that they should come to hear and see plays and say nothing for their money.
Oh, yes, say what you will. So it will be to purpose and in place.
Can anything be out of purpose at a play? I see no reason if I come here and give my 18 pence or 2 shillings for my seat, but I should take it out in censure on what happens on the stage.
Your 2 shilling worth is allowed you, but you take 10 shilling worth, 20 shilling worth, and more, and teach others about you to do the like. You cry up and down every scene, be it right or wrong.
Who should teach us the right or wrong of a play?
If your own intellect cannot do it, or the love of modesty and truth, all other entreaties or attempts are vain. You are fitter spectators for the bears than us, or the puppets.
Let us mind what we have come for, the play.
Act Three begins. We are still in Lady Lodestone's house. Master Needle, my lady's steward and tailor, Nurse Keep, and Timothy Item, Dr. Rutt's apothecary, enter.
Where's the doctor, Master Needle?
Master Timothy Item, most learned apothecary, you are welcome. He is with him at dinner.
Dinner? Death that he will eat now, having such a business that so concerns him.
Why, can any business concern a man like his mate?
Oh, 20 millions, Nurse Keep, to a physician that has a practice. Huh? I do bring him news from all points of the compass.
In, Master Item, and furnish forth the table with your news. The guests will hear it.
I heard they had fallen out.
Oh, but they are reconciled and put together again. You may go in. You'll find them at high eating. Oh, The parson has an edifying stomach and a persuading palate like his name. He hath begun 3 draughts of sack.
They follow him?
Oh, no. Sir Diaphanus is a recusant in sack. He only takes it in French wine with an alloy of water. In, Master Item, and leave your peeping.
I've a good mind to peep a little too. Sweet Master Needle, How are they set?
Oh, at the board's end, my lady.
And my young Mistress Byer. Mm.
Yes, the parson on the right hand, and next to him, Mistress Polish. Next, Sir Diaphanus against Sir Moth, knights one against another.
Oh, yeah.
Then the soldier, the man of war, and man of peace, the lawyer. Then the doctor and Master Bias, and Master Compass circumscribeth all.
Oh, that's me!
What's this?
Come to my mistress, all their weapons are out!
Mischief of men!
Now, for the bell of a strong water, quickly! I'll go in and turn the wolf fit!
You were a madman to do that at table and trouble all the guests or fright the ladies and gentlewomen.
Ah, pox upon you, women, and your half-man there. Sir Diaphanus, a perfume braggart. He must drink his wine with 3 parts water and have amber in it too.
And you must therefore break his face with a glass and wash his nose in wine.
But cannot he drink like the rest of us?
You should have used the glass rather as a balance than the sword of justice. But you have cut his face with it. He bleeds.
Oh,
come, you shall take sanctuary with me. The whole house will be up in arms against you else within this half hour. This way to my lodging.
Most rude actions. Carry Mistress Placentia to her bed.
Sir,
and use the efficacy upon her.
Sir,
with those oils.
Sir.
And keep your news now, Master Item. Now attend to Mistress.
Good Mistress Polish, look to her.
How do you, sweet Placentia?
She's in a sweat.
Wow. I am a fainting sweat, nurse.
Let her alone with Master Item. He has his orders.
But I have news, Doctor.
I'll hear it out when you have tended Mistress Placentia. Now take it out now.
Come along.
Was there ever such a guest brought to my table?
These boisterous soldiers have no better breeding. Ah, here Master Compass comes.
Where is your Captain Ironside?
Gone out of doors.
Would he had never come in them. He has discredited my house and board with his rude, swaggering manners and endangered my niece's health by drawing of his weapon. God knows how far, for Dr. Rutt does not.
The doctor is an ass, then, if he says so.
So you say, sir, but doctors near better.
Mistress Polish, nurse keep, how does she?
She's somewhat better. Master Item has brought her a little of air.
But your brother, Sir Moth, has fallen into a fit of the apoplexy. It were a happy place for him and us if he could steal to heaven thus. All the house is calling Master Doctor.
Yes, Master Doctor.
Eh? Oh, then I must go.
The parson's pale in the mouth already for the fear of the fierce captain.
Help me to my chamber, mistress.
Oh, my lady.
Would I could see the day no more, but night hang over me like some dark cloud that, buried with this loss of my good name, I and my house might perish thus forgotten.
Oh, my lady,
her taking it to heart thus afflicts me more than all these accidents, for they'll blow over. Ah, Sir Diaphanus and Factious.
It was a barbarous injury, I confess, Sir Diaphanus, but if you will be counseled, sir, by me, the reverent law lies open to repair your reputation. That will give you damages. £5,000 for a finger I have known given in court. Just let me pack the jewelry.
There's nothing vexes me, Master Practice, but that he has stained my new white satin doublet and bespattered my spick-and-span silk stockings on the very day they were put on. And he has a spot on my hose, too.
Your clothes are wounded desperately, and that, I think, troubles a courtier more than a gash in his flesh.
My flesh? Oh, I swear, had he given me twice so much, I never should have noticed it. But my clothes, to be defaced and stigmatized so foully. I take it as an injury done to me above the wisdom of our laws to right.
Why then, your challenge him?
I will take advice.
Ah.
Master Practice here doth urge the law.
I do.
And reparation will make me credit beside great damages. Yes, yes, let him peck the jury.
You speak like Master Practice, one that is the child of a profession he is vowed to. But you must have the counsel of the sword and square your action to their rules if you do right.
Mm. I tell you, Master Compass, you speak not like a friend of the law, nor scarce a subject to persuade him thus to a breach of the peace. Sir, you forget there is a court above the Star Chamber. chamber set up to punish rout and riot.
Oh, I do remember it. But you're not here, but I was bound to say, before you know whether the amorous knight dares break the peace in a duel.
Oh, Troughmaster Compass, I take you as my friend. I shall appoint you in any matter that's reasonable to see we may meet fair and on even terms.
You say you'll meet him on even terms. I do not see, indeed, how that can be, twixt Captain Ironside and you. Now I consider it. He is my brother. I do confess we have been called so 20 years, but you are, sir, a knight in court, allied there, and so befriended. You may easily deal with the worst outcome. He, a known, noted, bold boy of the sword, hath all men's eyes upon him, and there's no London jury that does not convict on a man's reputation than strict evidence. Then you have many brethren and near kinsmen. If he kill you, 'twill be a lasting quarrel twixt them and him, whereas Rudd Ironside, although he hath got his head into a beaver hat with a huge feather, is but a courier's son, and has not 2 old leather caps to mourn him if he die. You are generally beloved. He hated so much that all the hearts and votes of men go with you in the wishing all prosperity unto your purpose. He is a fat, corpulent, unwieldy fellow. You, a dieted spark, fit for the combat. He has killed so many, as it is 10 to 1, his turn is next. You never fought with any, less slew any, and therefore had the better odds before you. I hope these things thus specified unto you are fair advantages. You cannot encounter him upon equal terms. Besides, Sir Silkworm, he hath done you wrong in a most high degree, and sense of such an injury received should so sharp and whet your anger that you should count yourself an host of men compared to him, and therefore you, brave sir, have no more reason to provoke or challenge him than a huge great porter has to try his strength upon an infant.
Master Compass, you rather spur me on than any way abate my courage to the enterprise.
I think I have done the part of a friend on either side in furnishing your fear with justification first, if you have any, or if you dare fight to heighten and confirm your resolution.
I now do crave your pardon, Master Compass. I did not apprehend your way before. You have circles, sir.
Sir, I do thank you, Master Compass, heartily. Now, I must confess, I never fought before, and I'd be glad to do things orderly in the right place. Now, I pray you instruct me, sir. Is it best I fight ambitiously or maliciously?
Sir, if you never fought before, be wary. Trust not yourself too much.
Why? I assure you I am very angry.
You know not if you'll fight or no, being brought to the place.
Oh, yes, yes. I have imagined him treble armed, provoked too, and as furious as Homer makes Achilles. And I find myself not frightened with his fame. One jot.
Well, yet, take heed. These fights, imaginarily, are less than skirmishes, the fight of shadows. But if there be no help for it, I would wish you send him a fair challenge.
I will pen it presently.
But word it in the most generous terms.
And a silken phrase. The courtliest kind.
Let me alone. I'll do it. I'll do it.
Come, bring Sir Moth out into the air a little. There, set him down. Dash some water in his face. Now, tweak him by the nose. Hard. Harder yet. If it but call the blood up from the heart, I ask no more. See what fear I can do. Pinch him in the nape of the neck now. Nip him. Nip him. Nip him, a master item.
He feels there's life in him.
He groans and stirs.
Tell him Captain Ironside's gone.
He's gone, sir.
Give him a box hard. Hard on his lip, yeah.
Where am I?
How do you feel yourself?
Sir.
But where?
In my nick.
I nipped you there. and in my heat. I boxed you twice or thrice to move those sinews, did I not, Master Pierce?
I swear you did.
No. What a brave man's a doctor to beat one into health. I thought his blows would even have killed him.
Is the wild Captain Ironside gone, that man of murder?
Oh, all is calm and quiet.
See you soon, Master Pierce, then all's well.
How quickly a man is lost and soon recovered.
Where there are means and doctors, learned men and their apothecaries, who are not now, as Chaucer said...
Leave your poetry, Mistress Polish.
Nay, I know when to hold my peace.
Then do it. Give me your hand, Sir Moth. Let's feel your pulse. It is a pursiness, a kind of stoppage or tumour of the purse for want of exercise that you are troubled with. Some ligatures in the neck of your bladder are so close-knit you cannot evaporate, and therefore you must use relaxatives. You cannot but trouble put your hand into your pocket to purge it, and this we sons of physic do call chiraga, kind of cramp or hand gout. You shall purge for it.
Indeed. Your worship should do well to advise him to cleanse his body.
You say well, Master Item. I'll prescribe him to give his purse a purge once, twice a week. That is my method with all my patients.
Oh, Doctor, and his apothecary, good Master Item, and Mistress Polish, too. Yes? We need you all. She's fallen again in a worse fit than ever.
Who?
Your charge, Mistress Placentia.
Come away, gentlemen.
Yes, I'll come to this drastic cure of yours, Doctor. Has mended me past expectations. Master Bias, will you come?
I'll stay and compose myself after the great... flutterings. This house is full of noise and fury. I can find no corner of it where I can rest and scheme.
Sir Diaphanous, have you done it?
I have, Master Compass. See here, Master Practice.
That's well.
But who shall carry it?
A friend, Master Bias, here, will not deny me that. What is? To take a challenge to a duel, I have written to Captain Ironside.
Oh. I cannot, sir. You shall pardon me. For two reasons of state, I bear no challenges. I will not jeopardize my lord's favor so, or forfeit mine own honor as his secretary and turn ruffian.
You shall not fight, sir. You shall only search out my antagonist.
Oh, sir, but if my lord, my patron, should hear I participated in any quarrel whatsoever, 'twere the end of me in all state business. I know politics. The gentleman has reason. Where was your friendship made?
We met in France. Yes,
in France? That garden of humanity, the very seed bed of all courtesies. Master Bias, take the challenge. Do the thing for France.
Why, hear you, Master Compass. I but crave your ear in private.
Right.
I would take his challenge if I thought Captain Ironside angry enough to kill him. For to tell you the truth, Sir Diaphanous is an impertinence in court, we think him, and troubles my lord's lodgings and his table with frequent and unnecessary visits.
Truth, Master Bias. I would not have you think I speak to flatter you, but you are one of the best politicians I have ever met, and the most subtly rational. I admire you, but do you not see in this case that you are an accessory to his wished for death? If you take his challenge, you will forfeit when your lord knows of it. Yes. Yes. The death and corruption of one thing in nature brings forth the birth of another. Oh, I'll protect you. You shall deliver it in my lodging safely and do your friend a service worthy of thanks.
Feast to you, gentlemen. Save to this mushroom, Sir Diaphanous, who I hear is menacing me with a challenge.
Yes, I have it here.
Which I come to anticipate and save your labor. Will you fight, sir?
Yes. In my shirt.
Oh, that's to save your doublet. I know it's a court trick. You would rather have an ulcer in your body than a tear in your clothes.
Captain, you are a coward if you're not fate in your shirt.
Sir, I do not mean to put it off for that.
I think a cup of generous wine were better than fighting in your shirt.
Sir, Nay, Valor, it is a valor of another nature than to be mended by a cup of wine.
Only one virtue called fortitude is worthy of the name valor.
Who hath it not is justly thought a coward, and is such.
Oh, you have read the play of Johnson's, The New Inn, that decries all other valor but what is for the public good.
I do that too, but did not learn it at the play. What? I think there is no valor in a private cause.
Sir, I'll dispute that.
Oh, I long to hear a man dispute in his shirt on valour and his drawn sword at his hand.
His valour will take cold. Put on your doublet.
His valour will keep cold. You are deceived.
Sirs, I do know all kinds of ways of doing business which the town calls valour is not but an excess of colour that reigns in testy old men.
Noblemen's porters and self-conceited poets.
It is rather a peevishness than any part of valour, nor is it your dull, desperate, resolving case.
Springing from narrowness of mind, ignorance being
which you find in gamblers.
Bankrupt merchants and discovered traitors.
My valour is a judicial valour that is found in noblemen and gentlemen of the best sort.
There are valours yet, Sir Diaphanus, you have not touched.
Oh, which are those?
A philosophical contempt of death is one, and then there's a Christian valour.
Oh, Christian.
Which is a quiet, patient toleration of whatsoever the malicious world with injury doth unto you, and consists in passion more than action, Sir Diaphanus.
Passion more than action. Sure, now I come to think on't, Master Bias, I do take mine to be a Christian valour. Yes, not a judicial valour, but a Christian valour.
Where's Master Needle? So you, Master Needle, we are undone.
What ails you, nurse?
Mistress Placentia is undone, she's crying out. Where's Master Needle?
Here.
Master Needle, run for Mistress Chair, the midwife. Oh, nay, look how the man stands as if he were gout. Mistress Placentia is lost if you do not haste away and get the midwife.
Where is the doctor?
Scoffy man and his apothecary little better. They laugh and jeer at all. Will you go and fetch the midwife to our mistress? We're all undone out.
News, good news, buttered news. My niece Placentia is found with child, the doctor tells me, and fallen in labour.
A child?
How? Oh.
Captain Arnside, you're here.
Stay, Sir Mark.
No, sir, I'm away.
Come back, sir, and tell us more.
He spied your swords out. Put them up, put up. You have driven him hence, and yet your quarrel's ended.
In a most strange way.
But then put up your sword, and on your doublet. Give the captain thanks.
Thank you, noble captain. Without your quarrelling, I would have married wench else.
Where's Compass?
Gone, shrunk hence, I fear.
The child is his, then?
I would like to have been abused in the business had the child been slurred onto me. A counterfeit.
Sir, we are all abused. All of us brought here as suitors. Abused.
No, this was a pitiful poor shift of your Ben Johnson boy to make his leading woman with child and fall in labour just to settle a quarrel.
With those borrowed ears have you heard, sir, all this while, the stream of the argument indicated her being with child from the very beginning. For it presented her in the first part of the second act with some apparent infirmity. The author, rightly, did not tell the audience the true nature of the illness till the quarrel, which hastened the discovery of it by frightening her and making her fall into labour. And all this in the short space of time allowed in a comedy. It was the writer's best stroke, and not an error, that the detection of the child should end the very quarrel that had produced it.
The boy is too hard for you, Brother Dampley. Best attend to the play and let him alone.
I care not for attending to the play. I'll damn it, talk, and do that I came for. I will not have gentlemen lose their privileges, nor I myself my prerogative, not for any fat, superannuated writer. Master Johnson shall not give me the law. I will censure and be witty and smoke my tobacco and enjoy my Magna Carta of criticism as my predecessors have done before me.
Even to license an absurdity.
Because the gentlewoman is in labour and the midwife may come on the sooner to put her and us out of our pain.
Well, look to your business afterwards, boy, that all things be clear and come properly forth, suited and set together, for I will watch what follows severely. And to the nail.
Let your nail run smooth, then, and not scratch. Lest the author be bold to pare it to the quick and make it smart. You'll find him as severe as yourself.
A shrewd boy. He has me everywhere. Ah, the midwife comes.
Stay, Master Needle. You go too fast upon the business. I must take some breath. Let me, Mr. Wool.
You give me a stitch of the stomach if I've marched a needle with your haste.
Good Mother Chair, mend this breach in Mistress Placentia. I'll give you a new gown, a new silk Gregoran gown. I'll do it, Mother Chair.
Oh, what will you do? You've done too much already with your prick seams and through stitches, Master Needle. I pray you sit not favouring your old tales, good midwife chair. Go up. Oh, Master Practice, Master Compass.
I know, nurse.
Where's my Lady Lodestone?
In her chamber, locked in, I think. She'll speak with nobody.
Knows she of this birth?
Alas, sir, no. Would she might never know it. Mistress Chair, Master Needle, come here with me.
I think her ladyship too virtuous and too nobly innocent to have a hand in so ill-formed a business.
She would not have her hand in a plot against you, Master Practice, whom she so loves, cries up and values, knows to be a man, marked out for a chief justice in his cradle.
Oh,
assure yourself she could not be so depraved to wish you a wife who might prove you shame.
I must confess a great beholdingness for her ladyship's offer and good wishes. But the truth is, I never had affection or any liking for this niece of hers.
You foresaw this, then?
Well, I had my signs and my prognostications.
You read almanacs and study them to some purpose, I believe.
I confess, I do believe, and pray to according to the planets and time.
And do observe the sign in making love?
As in phlebotomy.
And choose your mistress by the good days and leave her by the bad.
Well, I do and I do not. I tell you, Master Compass, as my friend,
yes,
and in strict confidence, I cast my eyes long since upon the other wench, Mistress Polish's daughter Pleasance. Another manner of peace for handsomeness than is the niece, but that is sub sigillo, in absolute confidence. I give it to you in hope of your aid and counsel in the business.
You need counsel. The most famous counsel of the kingdom and in all courts. That is a jeer in faith worthy of your name and your profession too. Sharp Practice, Master Practice.
No, upon my law, as I am a bencher and now a lecturer at the Inns of Court of 22 years standing, I meant it.
If you meant it, the affairs are now perplexed and full of trouble. Give them breath and time to settle. I'll do my best, but in the meantime, you prepare the parson. Have you a license?
No, but I can fetch one.
Do, and mind, a bridal cup must be there too.
I shall find one.
I am glad to know all this for myself. I have always liked the maid, and loved her too. Ah, Master by us, and Sir Moth.
Tis an affront from you, Sir Moth. You brought me here to my ladies to woo a wife who since hath proved a cracked commodity.
No fault of mine if she be cracked in pieces. It was my sister's fault that owns the house where she hath got her misfortune, makes all the noise. I keep her legacy safe. That is not scattered. The monies rattle not, nor are they thrown to make a mad scramble yet among the suitors.
Can you endure that flout, Master by ass, and have been so bred in the politics? The injury is done you and by him only. He lent you money in advance, I hear, and refuses to pay it. Furnished you for the wooing, and now waves you off.
I resent it. My lord shall know it.
And all the lords of the court, too.
What a moth you are.
To draw in young statesmen into the noose of an infamous matrimony.
Yes, infamous. Quasi. In communum farmem and matrimony, quasi matter of money, with his lewd known and prostituted niece.
My known and prostitute? How you mistake and run upon false ground, Master Bias. Your lord will do me right. Now she is prostitute, and that I know it. Please you understand me? I mean to keep the dowry in my hands and pay no monies.
Mark you that, Master Bias? And you shall still remain in debt to him for the marriage furniture and the money in advance.
Good Master Compass, for the sums he's had of me, I do acquit him. They are his own. Here before you, I do release him.
Good.
Oh, sir.
Slid, take it. I do witness it. He cannot hurl away his money better.
I shall get much, sir, by my acquaintance to be my friend and now report to his lordship as I deserve.
I will witness it and to the value. 400 is the price, if I mistake not, of your true friend in court. Shake hands. You have bought him and bought him cheap.
I am his worship's servant.
Sealed and delivered. Go thy ways. Here are a pair of humours reconciled now. Only money kept them at a distance.
Out! Peace, thou caitiff witch! Oh, bald, beggar, gypsy, anything but an honest woman.
What you place, thy Polly? Thou art a traitor to me. Oh. Leave the apple and the servant too.
a viper that has eat a passage through me to my own bowels by thy recklessness.
What frantic fit is this? I'll step aside and hide behind the arras. 'Tis the customary thing to do on such occasions.
Did I trust thee, wench, with such a secret of such consequence that did so concern me and my child, our livelihood and reputation? And hast thou undone us by thy connivance, nodding in a corner, and suffering her begot with child so basely? Sleepy, unlucky hag, thou bird of night. Good lady empress, had I the keeping of your daughter's cliquet, her virginity, was that committed to my trust?
Her daughter, Lady Lodestone's niece, Placentia, her daughter...
Softly, devil, not so loud. You'd have the house hear and be witness, would you?
Let all the world be witness, before I'll endure the tyranny of such a tongue and such pride.
What will you do?
Tell the truth, and shame the she-devil in puff sleeves. Run any danger by revealing all to my lady. How you changed the cradles and changed the children in them.
Not so loud.
Calling your own daughter Placentia and the true mistress by the name of Pleasance.
And must you be so loud?
I will be louder and cry through the house, through every room and in every office of the laundry maids till it be borne hot to my lady's ears. Ere I will live in such slavery, I'll do away with myself.
Didst thou not swear to keep it secret? And upon what book? I do remember now. The practice of piety by Lewis Bailey.
It was the practice of impiety out of your wicked forge. I know it now. My conscience tells me, first against the infants, to rob them of their names and their true parents, to abuse the neighbourhood and keep them in error. But most, my Lady Lodestone, she has the main wrong, and I will let her know it instantly.
Oh.
Repentance, if it be true, never comes too late.
Oh, what have I done? Conjured a spirit up I shall not lay again. Drawn on a danger and ruin on myself thus by provoking a peevish fool whom nothing will prey off or satisfy, I fear. The patience stirred is now turned to fury. I have run my bark on a sweet rock by mine own arts and trust, and I must get off again or dash in pieces.
Oh, this was a business worth the listening.
Did you see my mother? Mistress Placentia, my lady's niece, is newly given birth to the bravest boy. Will you go see it?
First, I'll know the father.
The midwife has promised to find a father for it, if there be need.
Pretty Pleasance, I have news for you I think will please you.
Oh, what is it, Master?
Stay, you must. Deserve it ere you know it. Where's my Lady Lodestone?
Retired unto her chamber and shut up.
She hears none of this yet? Well, do you command a coach and fit yourself to travel a little way with me?
With her, for God's sake.
Wherever, it will not to your loss, believe it, if you dare trust yourself.
With you, the world over.
The news will well require the pains, I assure you. And in this tumult, you will not be missed. Command the coach. It is a quick business and cannot be done without you.
I'll command the coach.
Where is Parson Callett? Never near when needed. Deep in his cups, no doubt.
Master Compass.
Our master practice. Have you the marriage license?
Here it is.
Let's see it. Your name's not on it.
Well, I'll fill that in presently. It has the seal, which is the main thing, and is registered. The clerk knows me and trusts me.
Have you the parson?
They say he'll come here.
I would not have him seen here with you. It would breed suspicion. Oh, take your license with you and fill in the blank, or leave it here with me. I'll do it for you.
Oh,
wait you for us at his church behind the old exchange. Uh-huh. Welcome in the coach, Mistress Pleasance, Parson Pallet, and myself. We'll meet you there within this quarter of an hour.
I am much bound unto you, Master Compass. You have all the law and squire practice forever at your service. I'll tell you some news, too. All chances of your future employment have gone. Thinwit's dead.
Thinwit?
Chief Surveyor of General Projects. Dead?
Dead? When died he?
This morning.
Conceal it, Master Purchase, and remember the main affair you have in hand with...
I will.
Thinwit dead, and all my hopes of employment dead with him. Dead? Poor Thinwit. Now I must plot for myself.
The coach is ready, sir.
Ah, 'tis well, fair Pleasance, though now we shall not use it. Oh. Bid the coachman drive to the marriage church and stay about thee till Master Practice employs him. Then you come back here.
Well, first you want the coach, then you don't.
Oh, I have a license now, which must have entry before my lawyers. Master, Parson Pallet.
Master Compass.
Thou shall be a mark advanced. Here is money, and I'll do something for you.
What, Master Compass?
But run the words of matrimony over my head and Mistress Pleasances in my chamber. Yes. There's Captain Ironside to be a witness, and here's a license to secure thee. Parson. Yes. What do you stick at?
It is afternoon, sir. Mm-hmm. Directly against the cabin of the church. You know it, Master Compass. And besides, I'm engaged by your worshipful friend, the learned palm master, practising this business.
Come on, engage yourself. Who shall be able to say you married us but in the morning, the most canonical millage of the day, if you say so?
I'm back, Master.
Come, Mistress Pleasance. We cannot prevail with a rigid parson here. But, sir, I'll keep you locked in my lodging till be done by someone else. For Captain Ironside, my brother, will not like it.
Can you think, sir, I would deny you anything? I will do it for you. Have you a wedding ring?
I interpose here.
Oh, good. This ring will give you what you both desire.
Well said, Parson.
Wedding ring? Posey?
I'll tell you all the news, so you'll understand everything, Mistress Pleasance. Yes.
Go get a nurse. Procure her at what rate you can, and out of the house with it, Master Meagle. It is a bad commodity.
Good Mistress Chair, I know it, but the best must now be made of it.
And shall. You shouldn't have fret so, Mistress Polish. No, you gamekeep. Mistress Placentia shall do well. I have known 20 such breaches pieced up and made whole without anyone hearing of it.
Blessed woman. Blessed be the peacemaker.
I'll hear no peace from her. I've been wronged. So has my good lady Loadstone. And I will write her, hoping she'll write me.
Good, gentle keep, I pray thee, mistress nurse. Pardon my passion. I was misadvised. Now, be thou made better by this grave, sage woman, who is the mother of matrons and great persons, and knows the world.
I do confess she knows something, and I know something.
But put your somethings together, then.
I can, and will for you both. First, I have sent the bastard away. The cause gone, the shame ceaseth. Then, by my caudle and my cullis, I'll set Placentia on her feet about the house here. She's young, and must necessarily stir somewhat. Her youth will bear it out. She shall pretend to have had a fit of hysteria, that is all. If you but have a confidential laundress to blanch the linen, will you be laughed at and despised? Come, be friend, and keep these women matters, smug secrets to ourselves in our own borders. We shall mar all if once we open the mysteries of the women's dressing rooms and tell what's done with them.
Breath of an oracle! You shall be my dear mother, wisest woman that ever tipped her tongue with points of reasons to turn her hearers. Mistress Keep. Relent. I did abuse thee. I confess to penance and on my knees ask thee forgiveness.
Rise. She did begin to melt. I see it. Nothing grieved me so much as when you call me a bawd. Witch did not trouble me, not gypsy, no, nor beggar. But a bawd was such an name.
No more rehearsals. Repetitions make things the worse.
The more we stir... You know the proverb.
The more we stir a turd, the worse it stinks.
What's done and dead, let it be buried. New hours will fit fresh handles to new thoughts.
I have sent a servant to run to the church and get all the drunkards to ring the bells and jangle them for joy. My niece has brought an heir to the house, a lusty boy.
Oh, Brother Moth!
You have been asleep at afternoons. It is not wholesome, against all the rules of physics, sister. The little doctor will not like it. Our niece is new delivered of a chopping child.
It's true, then. I heard murmur of it in my chamber.
True, 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 true.
Let me sit, be mad, and blow bubbles in the air. Who's the father?
Master Compass. He is the man, they say. Fame gives it out, has done that act of honour to our house and friendship, to pump out a son and heir that shall inherit nothing. Surely nothing for me, at least. I invite you, sister, to be a witness. I will be your partner, and give it a horn spoon and a wooden dish. Bastard and beggar's badges, with a blanket for the doxy, to march round the city with bag and baggage.
Thou malicious knight!
Ah, gentle Master Compass. I wish you joy of your young son and heir to the house you have sent us.
I have sent you. Come in, friends. Madam, I pray you be pleased to trust yourself unto the company of Captain Ironside, Sir Diaphanous, Parson Pallet, Mistress Pleasance here.
I did that before, which brought on this calamity upon me, with all the infamy I hear. You swaggering Ironside.
Madam.
He is returned here to you. Your vowed friend and servant comes to sup with you, so we all do, and will prove he hath deserved that special respect and favour from you.
What impudence is this? Can you endure to hear it?
Yes, and you shall hear it. Who will endure it worse? What deserves he, in your opinion, madam, if he can resolve the knot, restore the fame first of your house and your ladyship's quiet, render then your niece a virgin and untouched, and make all plain and perfect as it was the scheme to betray you and your name?
He speaks impossibilities.
Here stands the good captain. To what you call his swaggering, we owe all this. Mm. And here stands your niece, whom I have married, witnessed by these gentlemen, the knight, captain, and parson, and this grave Master Bias.
Oh, dearest aunt.
Aunt? But she is Pleasance, Mistress Polish's daughter.
Her false mother, the said Polish, has confessed it to Nurse Keep, how they did change the children in their cradles.
To what purpose?
To get the dowry, or some portion of it, which you must now disperse entire to me, Sir Moth, if I but gain her ladyship's consent.
I bid God give you joy, if this be true.
As they say in the old song, as true it is, lady. The dowry is mine with interest, Sir Moth. I will not give you a single brass farthing of interest on the interest. In the meantime, I do commit you to the guard of Captain Ironside till you pay all.
Sir, you must prove it and the possibility of it ere I believe it.
I leave that to the trial.
Master Compass!
Oh, Master Practice, did you meet the coach?
Yes, sir, but it was empty.
Well, I sent it for you. The business has been dealt with here before you came. I'll tell you how. You are a man who will look for satisfaction.
So we do all, and long to hear the right of it.
And long to hear the right of it. Troth, I'm one of those that labour with the same longing, for the plot is almost puckered and pulled into that knot by the author, which I cannot untie, boy, with all the strength of my imagination.
It is not your business to be troubled or perplexed with it, but to sit still and wait. The more your imagination busies itself, the more it is entangled, especially if, as I told you in the beginning, you happen to get hold of the wrong end of it.
We have said sufficient, Brother Dumpley. We are here as spectators at a comedy, who must wait the process and outcome of things as the poet presents them, not as we would corruptly fashion them. We come here to behold plays and censure them as they are made, not to beslave our own thoughts with censorious spittles tempering the author's clay, to mould every scene anew. That were a mere potter's ambition, most unbecoming the name of a gentleman. No, let us mark it, and not lose the business by talking, and follow the right thread.
Why, the play might have ended here if you'd have let it, and have spared us the vexation of a fifth act yet to come. Everybody here knows the end of it already, or may in part guess it.
That guess is a kind of throwing of the dice. A stay and see his last act, his catastrophe. How he will perplex you, or spring some fresh trick to entertain the spectators till some unexpected and new encounter rectify all, and make good the conclusion.
Which ending here would have been dull, flat, and unpointed, without any shape or sharpness, Brother Dampley.
Well, let him keep us guessing, then. Master Needle and Master Item stand ready, I see.
Master Item, here's a house divided and quartered into parts by your doctor's schemes. He has cast such aspersions on my lady's niece here of having had a child as hardly will be wiped out.
Why, is it not true, Master Needle?
True?
It... Was she not in labour and the midwife sent for?
Now there's your error now. You have drunk of the same water.
I believed it and told everyone too.
You wronged the party. She had no such thing about her, innocent creature.
What had she then?
Only a fit of hysteria. They burnt old shoes and goose feathers, a few horn shavings with a bone or two, and she is well again about the house.
Is it possible?
See it, and then report it.
Our doctor's judgment is half cracked, then.
Cracked most hugely with my lady, and sad Sir Moth, her brother, who is now under a cloud a little.
Of what? Disgrace?
He is committed to the custody of Captain Ironside on the displeasure of Master Compass, but it will blow over.
The doctor shall reverse this instantly and set it right again, if you'll help me in a trifle, Squire Needle, that comes into my noddle now.
Oh, good, Needle and Noddle.
Oh.
What may it be?
Why, but to take to your bed, fake an illness like walking in your sleep or talking in it, so the doctor may have grounds to effect a cure and raise his reputation.
Oh, anything to serve the man I love and honour.
Oh, give you joy, Mademoiselle Compass. You are in his whirlpool now, married against your mother's leave and without counsel. He has fished fair and caught a frog, I fear.
Oh.
What fortune have you to bring him as a dowry? You can tell him stories now. You know a world of secrets.
I know nothing but what is told me, nor can I discover anything.
No, you shall not. Go, get you in.
I will.
I'll keep you fasting from his flesh a while.
Oh, dear Placentia. Mistress Chair, Mistress King.
Mistress Polish, I feel weak. Oh.
She has been with my lady, who kissed and kissed her twice or thrice.
And called her niece again.
You have done a miracle, Mother Chair.
Yes.
You shall have a new brave 4-pound beaver hat set with enameled studs, as mine is here.
Whoa.
And a right pair of crystal spectacles. Rock crystal, thou mighty mother of dames, hung in an ivory case on a gold belt, and silver bells to jingle as you pace before your 50 daughters in procession to church or from the church.
Thanks, Mistress Paul.
Oh, she does deserve as many pensions as there be pieces in a maidenhead, were I a prince to give them.
Come, sweet Placentia, you shall present yourself about the house.
I will try.
Now be confident and bear up. You shall be seen.
I must protest, Master Compass. You have done me an injury.
Who would think he could be thus testy, Brother Ironside?
A grave head given over to the study of our laws.
And the honour of the Commonwealth.
And you to mind a wife.
What should you do with such a trifle as a wife that might distract you or hinder you in your career?
Oh, he shall not think on it.
I will make over to you my post of Surveyor of the General Project.
And that's an office you know how to stir in.
And make your profit in.
Which are indeed the purposes of any lawyer. Show your activity and how you are built for business.
I accept it if it is yours to give. I tell you that Master Finwit died.
But before he died, we learn he made my brother Compass Surveyor of the General Project.
Did he?
Which I now give you. But I must have a release from you so you'll not take me to court on the marriage matter.
Do one, I'll do the other.
It's a match before my brother Ironside.
Tis done.
We two are reconciled, then.
Oh, to a lawyer, an office and a title or half-title is better than a wife.
And we'll save charges of coaches, velvet gowns and cut-work smocks. I must talk with you, Master Practice, about a recovery of my wife's dowry. What way I were best to take?
The plainest way.
What's the plainest?
Sue him at common law. Arrest him on an action on which bail will be refused. Yes. Say, £500,000. You can prove your marriage?
Yes, we will talk of it some more.
She was with child, and Master Compass got it.
Why, that, you see, is manifestly false. He has married the other, our true niece, he says. He could not woo them both. He's not such a stallion to leap at all. Again, no child appears that I can find with all my searching. A fit of hysteria, Mother Chair says she had, which the midwife cured with burning bones and feathers.
Where is my patient?
Oh, noble doctor.
Ah, Arthamoth.
Did not you and Master Item tell me our niece was in labour?
If I did, what of it?
And the Mother Chair was sent for.
So she was, and is in the house still.
This has been said since. She was delivered of a brave boy, and Master Compass is the father.
I pay no attention to the rattle of gossips. I hope you do not take me for a pimperant who deals in smock affairs. Where is the patient, the infirm man I was sent for, Squire Needle?
Is Needle sick?
Oh, my apothecary tells me. He is in danger.
Doctor! Doctor!
Ah, oh, now, how is it, Master Item? Where is he?
I cannot hold him down. He is up and walks and talks in his sleep with his eyes shut as sensibly as he were awake. See where he comes. And the women following.
He's fast asleep. Observe him.
Master Needle?
He'll tell us wonders. What are you women doing here? Hunting a man half naked? You are fine beagles. You'd have his testicles.
Oh,
I have line breeches on.
He has, but he sees nothing.
Oh, yes. I see who hides the treasure yonder.
Huh? What treasure? Shh, if you ask questions, he wakes immediately, and then you'll hear no more till his next fit.
And whom she hides it for?
To mark the listen.
A fine she-spirit it is, an Indian magpie. She was an alderman's widow and fell in love with our Sir Moth.
In love with moi?
Hear you.
And she has hid an alderman's estate in little holes in the garden and scrapes earth over them where none can spy but I, who see all by the glowworm's light that creeps before. Come, come.
Oh, and Mistress Keep, Mistress Chair, follow him, but soft,
indeed. I knew the gentlewoman, oh. Alderman Parrott's widow, oh. A fine speaker, as any in the livery and company of ladies. She did become her scarlet and black velvet, her green and purple.
Save the rainbow colours.
She dwelt in Doolittle Lane atop of the hill there, in a round house beside Sir Chime Squirrel's. She would eat naught but almonds, I assure you.
Would thou hadst a dose of pills, a double dose, as a purge to make thee turn the other way.
You are a foul mouth, Doctor. I tell you true, and I did long to tell it you. You have spread a scandal in my lady's house here of her sweet niece you can never undo with all your purges. That she hath had a child. Here she doth spit upon thee and defy thee, or I do it for her.
Pray you bind her, Sir Mother, or send her to Bedlam.
A fortune and treasure hidden for me.
Go thou thither that better hast deserved it, shame of doctors. Where could she be delivered? Hmm? By what charm restored to her strength so soon? Who is the father? Or where the infant? Ask your oracle that walks and talks in his sleep.
Sir Matthew lost a fortune listening to her babble. Good madam, lock her up.
You must give losers leave to speak, good doctor.
Oh, come, Sir Matthew, we must after our sleeping man.
We will.
Come back, sir. No. I still have more to say.
No, no, stay. Where is my wife? What have you done with my wife, Mistress Polish?
Aye, sweet Master Compass, I honour you and your wife.
Well, do so. I will not call you mother, though. Good Mistress Polish, where have you hid my wife?
I hide your wife.
Or she is run away.
That would make all suspect, sir, afresh. Come, we will find her, if she be in the house.
Why should I hide your wife, good Master Compass?
You are goody, Polish. That's good at malice, good at mischief. All that can perplex or trouble a business.
You may say what you will, Master Compass.
I'll sweep all corners, and I'll cried by the crier all through the town, but I will find her.
Buzz, buzz, buzz. Polish blows on everything.
A busy woman is a fearful grievance.
Will Master Needle sleep again?
As soon as he is warm. It is the nature of the disease and all these cold, dry fumes that are melancholic to work at first, slow and insensibly in their ascent.
In the privy and gins to talk.
Of the former matter item?
The treasure and the lady.
He cannot keep off it. I shall know all then.
Hear you, Tim, let no man interrupt us.
Sir Diaphanus and Master Bias, his court friends, desire to kiss your niece's hand, Sir Moth, and gratulate the firm recovery of her good fame and honour.
Good. Say to them, Master Item, my niece is at my lady's side. They'll find her there. I'll see them presently.
Quiet! Shh. Here comes Master Needle.
Oh, how do you do, Lady Bird? So hard at work still? What's that you say? Do you bid me walk? Walk, sweet bird? And tell our knight? Oh, I will. How? Walk, name? Walk? I think you're angry with me, Poll. Poll? Fine, Poll. Poll is a fine bird. Oh, fine, Lady Poll. Almond for Parrot. Parrot's a brave bird. 300,000 pieces have you stuck into the ground within the garden. Oh, bounteous bird.
And me, most happy creature.
Smother your joy.
How? And drop twice so many?
Where?
Shh, contain yourself.
In the old well?
I cannot. I am a man of flesh and blood. Who can contain himself to hear the ghost of a dead lady do such works as these?
I will go try the truth of it.
Ah, he's gone. Follow him, Tim. See what he does, sir.
He's a rare fellow. Has a rare disease.
And I will work as rare a cure upon him.
How good, doctor.
When he hath uttered all that you would know, I'll cleanse him with a pill as small as a pea and stop his mouth. for there his disease lies, between the muscles of the tongue.
Must I do? What did he say?
What did he do?
The first steps he steps into the garden, he dug up these 5 coins, one after another. The dirt sticks on them still.
I know enough. Doctor, proceed with your cure. Make thee famous. Famous among the sons of the physicians. Thou shalt have a golden beard. And item here, have one of the silver.
Oh, sir.
Where is Squire Needle?
Wandered away now he's done the work.
Prepare his pill and give it him before supper.
I will, Doctor.
Send for a dozen of labourers tomorrow to turn the surface of the garden up.
Bruise every clod.
And have all sifted, for I'll not lose a gold piece of Madame Parrot's bounty.
And then I would go down into the well.
Myself? No trusting other hands. 600,000.
'Twill purchase a whole bench of aldermen down to their shirts.
There never did a crew so great a gift to man, and from a lady I never saw but once. Now I remember we met at Merchant Taylor's Hall at dinner in Threadneedle Street. I shall love parrots better after this. Oh, my truest friend in court. Dear Master Bias, you hear the recovery of our niece in payment credit?
Yes, I have been with her and congratulated her. But I am sorry to find the author of the foul aspersion here in your company, this insolent doctor.
Oh, sure. You do mistake him. He's a rare man, a doctor in his way. He's done the noblest cure here in the house on a poor squire, my sister's tailor, Needle, that talked in his sleep, would walk to St. John's Wood and Waltham Forest, escape all the ponds and pits in the way, run over 2-inch bridges with his eyes shut, and in the dead of night. I'll have you better acquainted with him. Doctor, here is my dearest friend in court, wise, powerful, Master Biart. Pray you salute each other, not as strangers, but true friends.
Master.
Sir.
This is the gentleman you brought today as suitor to your niece.
Yes.
You had agreed, I heard, a contract drawn between you.
And sealed.
What broke you off?
This rumour about her, was it not, Master Biart?
Which I find now false, and therefore come to make amends. I stand by the condition of the old contract.
Faith, give them him some off whatever they were. You have a brave occasion now to cross the flaunting Master Compass, who pretends he has a right to the dowry.
And claims it. Do you hear he's married?
We hear his wife is run away from him. She is not to be found in the house, though a hue and cry is made for her.
She ne'er heard of. The safety of Great Britain lies on't. You are content with the £10,000 friend we are?
I am, sir.
Oh, here comes the parson. He'll make all sure.
Go with my friend, Vias Person Parrot, to my niece, Mistress Placentia. Assure them we are agreed.
Mm-hmm. And Mistress Compass, too, is found within.
Oh,
you shall still have time, sir, to triumph on Master Compass when this fine feat is done, and his brother Ironside.
Yes, to the treasure and to the well.
To the well, yes.
Mistress Polish, was ever any lady used so barbarously by a malicious woman pretending to be mother to her too?
Pretending, sir? I am her mother.
Out, hag. Thou that hast put all nature off and woman for sordid gain, betrays the trust committed unto thee by the dead as from the living, change the poor innocent infants in their cradles, defrauded them of their parents, change their names, calling Placentia Pleasance, Pleasance Placentia, abuse the neighbourhood, but most, my Lady Lodestone, didst enforce an oath from this poor woman, Nurse Keep, on a pious book to keep secret thy impiety.
Have you told this nurse?
No, he knows it, and much more, as he's a cunning man.
A cunning fool, if that be all.
But now to your true daughter that had the child, and is the proper Pleasance. We must have account of that too, Mistress Polly.
This is like all the rest. Airy stuff, Master Compass.
Help, help, for charity! Some moth has fallen into the well.
Well, where?
In the garden. A rope to save his life.
How come he there?
He thought to take possession of a fortune, the old chain broken. Down he fell in the bucket.
Is it deep?
We cannot tell it. A rope, help with a rope.
He is got out again. Some moth is saved.
A little soused in the water, Sir Diaponus. Needles saved him.
The water saved him.
Are you hurt?
That's nothing.
In the name of fatal folly, brother, how came you in the bucket?
Well, none the time, sister. The doctor will tell you who have done the admirable cure upon your needle. Oh, give me thy hand, good needle. Here, yeah, thou camest timely. Take off my hood and coat. Let me shake myself a little. I have a world of business. Where is my friend Bias and his wife?
We are here, Sir Moth.
Together, sir.
Who bids God give them joy? Here they both stand, as married as the past nor words can tithe
it. We all wish them joy and happy.
I saw the contract and witnessed it.
He shall receive £10,000 tomorrow. You look for a compass or a greater sum, but 'tis disposed of another way. I have but one niece, verily, Master Compass.
I'll find another. Sergeant, sergeant.
Who's this?
A sergeant at arms. Do your duty, sir.
I do arrest your body, Sir Moth, in the King's name, on behalf of Master Compass and Dame Placentia, his wife. The action's entered £500,000.
Hear you this, sister?
I cannot stop the laws or hinder justice.
I will give him bail.
Yours will not be taken, worshipful doctor.
Sir?
You are good security for a suit of clothes to the tailor that dares trust you, but not for such a sum as is this action. Sergeant, you know my mind.
You must to prison, sir. Unless you can find bail the creditor likes.
I would fain find it if you'd show me where.
It is a terrible action. More indeed than many a man is worth.
Oh, faith, I will bail him at my own risk. Sergeant, big arm. Bear up, Sir Moth.
He is not worth the buckles about his belt.
Peace, lest he hear you, Doctor.
We'll make use of him.
What does your brother Compass, Captain Ironside, demand of us?
Your niece's dowry, because she is his wife. Mm.
I have assured one dowry to one niece, and have no more to account for that I know of. What I may do in charity, after supper, I'll spit into the basin and entreat my friends to do the same.
Spit out thy gall and heart, thou viper. I will now have no mercy, no pity of thee, thy false niece and needle. Bring forth your child, or I charge you with murder, you and Polish here, and Mother Chair.
The gentleman's fallen mad.
No, Mistress Midwife, I saw the child, and you did give it me and put it in my arms, and it did cry.
The law is plain. If it were heard to cry and you produced it not, he may indict all that conceal it of felony and murder.
And I will take the boldness, sir, to do it, beginning with Sir Moth here and his doctor.
Me? Good faith, this is likely to turn into a pretty business.
A shrewd business, Mary.
I have the right thread now, and I will keep it. You, Nurse Keep, confess the truth to my lady, the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I will.
No, I scorn to be robbed of my glories. I plotted the deceit and I will own it. Love of my child and the dowry provoked me, wherein, though the scheme hath failed in part, I will make use of the best side. This is my daughter, Placentia.
Mother?
Yes, mother. And she hath had a child.
How could you tell it in public?
She hath had a child. This to be her day of shame, I now confess it, by this false stick, Squire Needle.
Squire Needle? Yeah.
Madam, button down your tongue.
But since Sir Moth hath thought it good to change the father of it by marrying her to his dear friend Master Bias, with his free promise of £10,000 afore so many witnesses.
Whereof I am one.
And I another.
I should be unnatural to my own flesh and blood, would I not thank him. I thank you, sir. And I have reason for it. For here your true niece stands, fine Mistress Compass, to whom you are by bond engaged to pay the £16,000, which is her dowry due to her husband on her marriage day. I speak the truth. And nothing but the truth.
You'll pay it now, Sir Moth, with interest. You see, the truth breaks out on every side of you.
Into what nets of cheaters am I cast on every side? Each thread is grown a noose, a very mesh. I've run myself into a double trap of paying the money twice. Will you give up any of it?
Not a penny.
Yes. Bias's money.
But your friend at court, I will not rob him. Not your dear doctor here. Stand all together, birds of a nature all, and of a feather.
Well, we are all now reconciled to truth. There rests yet a gratuity from me to be conferred upon this gentleman, Captain Ironside, who, as Master Compass says, was cause first of the offence, but since has made amends. The quarrel caused the affright. That fright brought on the travail, which endeth all in reconcilement.
When the dowry is tendered and received.
Well, then you must have it.
'Tis well said, brother. And I, if this good captain will accept me, give him myself, endow him with my estate, and make him lord of me and all my fortunes. He that hath saved my honour, though by chance, I'll really study his, and how to thank him.
And I embrace you, lady, and your goodness, and vow to quit all thought of war hereafter, save what is fought under your colours, madam.
More work, then, for the parson? I shall cap the loadstone with an iron side, I see.
Thus I do take possession of you, madam, my true magnetic mistress and my lady.
Well, gentlemen, what think you of our play?
The ending was ingenious, but somewhat contrived for my taste. The plot was, now I come to think on it, artificial.
The piece was, after all, Master Proby, an artificial comedy. The thread held, boy, without a break, and wound off to the end easy as best silk. I venture there never was nor will be a play quite like it.
We agree on that, Brother Dampley.
But the last words must be yours, boy. Speak for the old author himself.
I will, sirs.
Plays in themselves have neither hopes nor fears. Their fate is only in the hearer's ears. If you expect more than you had tonight, the maker is sick and sad. But do him right, he meant to please you. For he sent things fit in all numbers, both sense and wit, if they had not miscarried. If they have, all that his faint and faltering tongue doth have is that you do not impute it to his brain, that's yet unhurt, although set round with pain. It cannot long hold out. All strength must yield, yet judgment would be the last i' the field with a true poet. He could hold in the drunkards and the noises of the inn in his last act, if he thought it fit to give you vapours in the place of wit. But better 'twas that they should sleep or spew than in the scene to offend him or you. This he did think, and this do you forgive. Whene'er the carcass dies, this art will live.
The Magnetic Lady, or Humours Reconciled, was written by Ben Jonson and acted by Andrew Branch as
John Trigust, Ben Jonson's servant.
Peter Howell as
Proby.
And Edward D'Souza as
Dampley.
In the play,
Compass, a scholar mathematic,
was played by Dinsdale Landon.
Captain Ironside, his brother.
Richard Durden.
Parson Pellet, prelate of the parish.
Timothy Bateson.
Dr. Rutt, a physician.
Peter Woodthorpe.
Sir Diaphanous Silkworm, a courtier.
John Moffat.
Practice a lawyer.
Peter Eyre.
Sir Moth Interest, a usurer of money, bud.
Peter Bayliss.
Bias, a subsecretary.
Tim Reynolds.
Needle, Lady Lodestone's steward and tailor.
Stephen Harold.
And Timothy Item, Dr. Rutt's apothecary.
Jonathan Taffler.
Lady Lodestone, the magnetic lady.
Was played by Rachel Gurney.
Mistress Polish, her gossip and she parasite.
Dillis Lay.
The real Placentia.
Tina Marion.
The real Pleasance.
Karen Asko.
Keep. The niece's nurse.
Elizabeth Spriggs.
And Chair, the midwife.
Sheila Grant. The music in the play was improvised by Stephen Deutsch. The Magnetic Lady was adapted by Peter Barnes and directed by Ian Cotterill.